You're listening to the Seahawks Insiders.
Geno looks, going to lay it up over the top. Got a man out there. It is Lockett. He has got it. Touchdown, Seahawks.
Getting you ready for Seahawks football every Sunday.
First and 10 at the Seattle 40. Play fake to Stafford. Going to stop. Going to look. Gets hit. Goes down. Back at midfield. Getting to him in the backfield is Darrell Taylor.
Presented by Delta, the official airline of the Seahawks. Now, here's your host, Jen Mueller.
Oh, it is good to be back with you. We're not exactly getting you ready for game day. We are, however, getting you ready for who the Seahawks might have on the field on game day. It's a special edition of the Seahawks Insiders Podcast. I'm Jen Mueller, joined by John Boyle, as always, from Seahawks.com.
Hi, Jen. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. We also have a guest today, so we should be on our best behavior.
One heck of a guest.
We do have one heck of a guest. I should have said that. I might have sold Rob Rang short by not introducing him, or just saying that he was one heck of a guest. But guys, if you have paid attention to any draft coverage, then you know his name. He is an NFL draft analyst for FoxSports.com. He is also a scout for the BC Lions of the Canadian Football League. He knows football talent. He's going to help us out today, and I think more importantly, he's our friend.
And might I also add, contributor to Seahawks.com's draft coverage. So go read all his articles. He has contributed to Seahawks.com, doing some great work for us as well. So the man knows the draft. We give this big introduction, but anyone who pays attention to the draft just knows you could just say, Rob Rang's here. And they're like, oh, shoot, you got Rob Rang.
It was such a kind introduction from you both. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I know that everybody wants to know how the Seahawks are going to draft, who the Seahawks are going to draft. John, you and I were in a press conference today with a number of those guys who will be making decisions and who have been scouting the talent. And I thought one of the most interesting things was we keep thinking about this, at least I keep thinking about this, from the standpoint of having all new coaches and trying to figure out what the philosophy is and trying to figure out like what's going to be different. It was interesting to hear how much is the same. In fact, why don't we hear from the assistant GM on that note?
In terms of the process, I would say it's familiar. We're going to work forward, move forward and work with the coaching staff and maybe get a little bit more specific as the process kind of develops and we get closer to the day. But I would say in terms of the evaluation process, this started, you know, in the summer last year. So we've maintained our consistency throughout. These guys are a huge part of it. Our staff in the back is a huge part of it. And it's, I would say it's very familiar. And that adds a level of comfort.
Yeah, that's Assistant General Manager Nolan Teasley there. And to his point, you know, these guys have been working on this draft long before we knew Mike McDonald was going to be the head coach, long before we knew Pete Carroll was not going to be. I mean, it's these guys almost as soon as one draft ends are on their way to the working on the next draft. So, you know, they always talk about, you know, you want tough, smart, reliable, fast players. That never changes no matter who the head coach is. And yes, there's going to be some schematic things here and there that make a little difference in certain positions, things like that. But big picture, what you're looking for in a draft, regardless of the head coach, is not going to change a bunch when you have a lot of the same guys. I mean, those four guys we heard from today, Aaron Heinlein and Matt Barry, were here starting the Mike Holmgren era. They've been here for multiple head coaches. Trent Kirshner came in 2010. Nolan Teasley, I think, 2013. So these guys have a lot of time working together.
Rob, when you think about what that means to be a Seahawks player, to be, you know, I don't want to say worthy, that's not the word, but to fit in, to be a Seahawk, what comes to mind?
Speed, physicality, reliability on and off the field. And going back to not only, of course, the Pete Carroll era, but Mike Holmgren and even head coaches before that. That's kind of to Nolan Teasley's point that things haven't changed, I don't believe, as much as maybe some from the outside looking in might assume. I think that the Seahawks are going to be prioritizing elite athletes, of course, that, again, have the character, the dedication to their craft that is going to allow them to be even better players at the NFL level than they ever were at college stage.
But Rob, doesn't every team say that? Like, what's different here? Like, I would imagine every team is saying some version of that right now, right?
Yeah, I think that they are. But I think that, you know, as I often like to say, the proof is in the pudding. And the reality is that this basically, with all due respect to, I'd like to say, a future Hall of Fame head coach and Pete Carroll, that the general manager hasn't changed, and the NFL draft has always been kind of John Schneider's show. Pete Carroll deserves an awful lot of credit for the success that the Seahawks have had over the past 14 years, but I think that so does John Schneider. And so when you have the continuity that the Seahawks scouting staff has, as our own John Boyle just mentioned a moment ago with Nolan Teasley and Trent Kirchner, Matt Barry, Aaron Hyline, then I think that, to your point, Jenna, it's a good one. Every NFL team is prioritizing good athletes who are good character people. But again, this is something that the Seahawks have demonstrated a focus on those types of players for a long time now.
Okay, wait. I have some proof that's in the pudding. Actually, that's numbers. I've got them here, guys.
But do we have pudding?
I would love to have pudding. We're going to have to get that for an upcoming episode. If you take a look at what John Schneider has done, they have drafted 15 players since 2010 that were selected to the Pro Bowl. And of all of their draft selection, 56 players have had at least a five-year career. Now, not all of those were in Seattle, but it does go to the point that you guys are both making of, they know what they're doing, they can identify talent, and there is definitely a certain style that they want to be playing with.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously an exact science for every team, but these guys have done a pretty good job with it. And one other thing I like that Nolan pointed out is kind of tied to this with the new coaching staff. A lot of people are wondering, like, oh, how much different is it going to be for John Schneider now that he's got that title of president of football operations and he has final say, which, yes, his title change, he does have a little more power ultimately over the organization, but it was such a collaborative process for the last 14 drafts. It's not going to feel different on draft day. I mean, yes, Pete Carroll's in that room and had a voice, but John Schneider was always like the draft, as Rob said, that was his thing. He was running that room, and that will continue. I mean, maybe the music choices change. Pete loved to play DJ. I know
that.
True. Has some reggae going, things like that. But this will still be Schneider running that draft room.
That's true. And that familiarity pays off in a number of different ways, because as we heard from Matt Barry, it changes the way that they talk about potential picks and what they're looking for in these guys.
We're really fortunate, Jen, to have been together, most of us up on the stage over 10 years, and the group overall. So we know each other really well. We know, you know, when we're talking about certain things having to do with makeup of a prospect, what guys mean. When talking about talent, scheme fit, we're able to talk the same language. That's a huge advantage. And it's been an advantage with us as a group to be able to convey that to the coaching staff as well, so that we're all talking the same language so that we can achieve alignment as we get, you know, to the finish line here next week.
Rob, you are a scout. Can you underscore the importance of what we just heard there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a huge part of it is just what Matt just said, that they're speaking the same language, and there's going to be so much focus in on the perception that Seattle is changing, say, their defensive front. You know, most of the time they were using a 4-3 alignment, at least on paper, previously with Pete Carroll, and there's this expectation there's going to be more of a three-man front with possibly four linebackers and Mike McDonald's system. To go with what Matt Barry was just kind of commenting about, the fact that the Seahawks scouts already can speak the same language, they understand what they're talking about. If they say a stack linebacker, for example, there doesn't have to be much explanation of what that is. That's scout to scout, coach to scout. And that, to me, is one of the more interesting things. I was fortunate enough to attend the University of Oregon Pro Day, for example. I saw Matt Barry there. I saw Ryan Grubb, the former offensive coordinator at the University of Washington, now, of course, Seattle's offensive coordinator. I can only imagine the car ride to Eugene, where you're going to have a scout who has been doing this as long and as well as Matt Barry has, and then just being able to kind of pick the brain of a Ryan Grubb about, hey, you were coaching against Oregon and their quarterback Bo Nix, for example. What did you see from your perspective? And again, to be able to relay that information to some of the scouts maybe who were not at that particular workout, and then be able to kind of tie it in with what the, you know, an offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb or Scott Huff for that matter had to say about some of the players in that particular workout. To me, that is what is going to make this process that much more efficient. And that's one of the biggest things here, guys, is that it does have to be efficient when you're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of players, and the Seahawks are going to have to whittle that down to the you know, the handful of players that are ultimately going to be drafting and signing as free agents.
Yeah, Rob, you just mentioned those coaches, and that was something that came up today is, you know, between obviously people know Michigan and UW sent the most players of any schools to the combine this year. And you've got, you know, obviously Mike McDonald spent a little bit of time in Michigan, but also Jay Harbaugh is there and the UW connection with those offensive coaches. So much like when Pete Carroll came in from USC and he knew college football really well, that not just everyone assumed back then, oh, he's going to bring in a bunch of USC guys, which he didn't do. He brought in very few USC guys, but it was more that knowledge of, he recruited guys that maybe didn't go to USC, or he just knew guys from coaching against them. And that's, I think, an advantage that early on that this coaching staff can help give the front office of, like, hey, they know some of these really good players very well.
Well, exactly. And that to me is one of the most exciting elements about it. As you just mentioned, you know, Pete Carroll, they didn't draft an awful lot of players from USC that very first season. But Richard Sherman is one of my favorites. And Pete Carroll talked about so many times how he knew Richard Sherman very well. I mean, with Sherman having grown up in the greater LA area and going to Stanford, and Pete Carroll always acknowledging that Sherman would have been just a perfect fit in his defense. Obviously, he came to Seattle as a draft pick and was a perfect fit in their defense. That is the familiarity that, to your point a moment ago, that Mike McDonald and Jay Harbaugh are both going to have at the University of Michigan. And think about all that great talent that that Michigan faced in the Big Ten, as well as what Ryan Grubb and Scott Huff faced in the Pac-12 with the University of Washington, and all the incredible talent that they faced in the Pac-12 this season. That, to me, I think gives the Seahawks a huge advantage entering this year's draft.
Well, the Seahawks have 7 selections, and I think everybody is looking for a little insight as to what Mike McDonald's system is going to look like, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Now, understandably, the Seahawks are playing things close to their vest. Every team is at this point in the year. But we did get this response from Nolan Teasley on the general characteristics they want on defense.
One thing that I would emphasize is versatility. I think they probably touched on it by retaining Leo, his ability to play up and down the line of scrimmage, depending on the front and personnel. I know a player that we're really excited about, that they're excited about, is moving around, is Draymond Jones, because of his ability off the edge, his ability to rush anywhere from the 3 to the 6, maybe even out to the 9. And so we feel like we have versatility throughout our roster. You talk about the back end with Julian Love, and now Rayshon Jenkins, were truly nuance at that safety position. Talk about Kobe Bryant, who's a player that's going into his third year, but he's played outside corner, he's played nickel, he's played dime. And so they've kind of identified some of that versatility that's already here, and we're excited about seeing what they can do with it.
Okay, Rob, so what are you hearing there? You've covered this team for a long time. What are you hearing in that comment?
I thought that it was interesting to mention Draymond Jones. There had been some speculation that perhaps because of the money that Draymond Jones is, is due this upcoming season. And then let's be frank, the lack of production that we saw this past season. I think that there is still a feeling that you just wait till Draymond Jones pops. And I think that it was kind of encouraging from a Seahawks perspective to hear the Seattle scouts, and clearly they are getting that feedback from Seattle's coaches that there is some excitement about Draymond Jones and the versatility that he offers. And obviously, the retaining Leonard Williams, to me, was the single biggest addition of this of the offseason for the Seahawks. I think that it just opens up so much more versatility for Seattle to attack this draft. So that to me is definitely intriguing. I love the fact that they mentioned the secondary, Kobe Bryant, for example, and his positional flexibility, Rayshon Jenkins and Kayvon Wallace, the fact that they have played multiple safety roles throughout their NFL careers. Of course, we know that the Seahawks already have a Pro Bowl Pro Bowler at safety, excuse me, returning in Julian Love. So that to me is intriguing. I thought that the fact that they didn't mention the linebackers, at least not in that clip, there were some comments a little bit later about linebackers that I thought were telling, because I think that Tyrell Dodson and Jerome Baker would be able to hit the ground running. They've both been very successful in their opportunities. But to me, one of the interesting positional groups in this draft for the Seahawks is at the linebacker spot. And one of my favorite linebackers is Edgerrin Cooper, who not only is a terrific pass rusher, which Mike McDonald has publicly mentioned before is a huge priority for any defensive player that the Seahawks might be bringing in, but also has the speed and awareness and coverage that the Seahawks might be looking for as well. So you asked, Jen, what made my brain kind of tick when I was listening to those comments. I just immediately thought, okay, who are the linebackers? Who are the defensive players that really are going to fit in with the Seahawks? And those, some of the players that immediately jumped out to me is some of the most versatile. Again, Edgerrin Cooper, a linebacker from Texas A&M. Cooper DeJean, a safety slash cornerback at the University of Iowa. And Darius Robinson, a 6'5", 285-pound defensive lineman who can play inside, he can play outside from Missouri. Those three players, to me, have the versatility that the Seahawks just said is definitely going to be high priorities for them on draft day.
One name Nolan didn't mention there that I'm really excited about versatility-wise, I think if there's one player I just want to see what they're going to, what Mike McDonald's going to do with them, it's Devin Witherspoon. And I just, you know, how are they going to use this guy? We saw so many good things out of him as a rookie playing, you know, outside and nickel. And I just got to think, they probably won't tell us what it is, and I doubt they'll show it in the preseason, but I got to think Mike McDonald's got a really cool plan for him. So that, just all the different pieces in the secondary, and then obviously what they could, you know, potentially add in the draft as well. I think there's, you know, the going back to the versatility that Nolan mentioned, there's just some really exciting possibilities for that unit.
Hey, Rob, what's the deepest position group in this draft, do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question. To me, there's three positional groups that we have to acknowledge. They're all on the offensive side of the ball: quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle. I think that this is the most unique offensive tackle class I've ever seen, Jen. But in terms of just numbers, you have to go with wide receiver. I mean, there's going to be wide receivers drafted this year well into day three that I think are going to wind up being starters in the NFL. The quarterback class is a really fun group as well. I mean, everybody focuses in on, you know, the presumptive number one overall pick, Caleb Williams, or the Heisman Trophy winner, Jaden Daniels, or, you know, or you just hear locally, of course, Michael Penix Jr. And I certainly recognize that, but I'm really intrigued by the depth of that quarterback class as well. In rounds two and three and four, you might see a Spencer Rattler from South Carolina, Joe Milton III from Tennessee, Michael Pratt from Tulane are a couple of my favorite quarterbacks in this class, and I expect them to go on day two, maybe even early day three, but I see starting caliber talent there. So it sounds like a simple question. I appreciate it, Jim, but at the same time, it's a complicated question just because it's unusual to have such great depth at quarterback. And again, I've been doing this for a long time. What I find the most intriguing positional group is actually offensive tackle, which nobody wants to talk about the big guys except draft nerds like me. But I really do think that's one of the things that really separates this class from many of the others in the past.
Quick follow-up on that Seahawks related, when we talk tackle, I think a lot of fans, let's say a tackle gets drafted early, which of these guys do you see as potential, you know, they're just definitely a tackle versus this guy can move inside? So if Seahawks fans hear a name, whether it's 16, whether it's trade back, who's a guy that maybe looking at, okay, that guy's definitely a tackle versus is he a guy that's going to come in and be a starting guard?
Yeah, I appreciate the question, because I think that there's so much talk right now about two pretty local prospects. Troy Fautanu, the Morris Trophy Award winner, was a left tackle at the University of Washington the vast majority of his career. He played a little bit of left guard. If he happens to be available at number 16 overall, considering the familiarity with Ryan Grubb, Scott Huff, his size, 6'5", 320 pounds, got long arms, he's athletic. I think that he can slide inside and play guard, no problem. He's a very physical player. But typically, tackles are worth their weight in gold, essentially. I'd be surprised if Fautanu is available to Seattle at number 16 overall. And then Taliesin Fuaga is a right tackle for Oregon State. Because his arms are just a touch shorter, again, there's a lot of people who want to slide him inside the guard. Again, I think that he can play that right tackle position and do it very, very well. I also would be surprised if he is available to Seattle at number 16 overall. If either one of them are, I think that, those two selections make a lot of sense because they do have that positional versatility. They can play tackle. They can also slide inside to guard. I'll give you another player that I think would make some sense for the Seahawks if they're looking for an interior offensive lineman, despite the fact that he played his entire college career essentially outside, that being Graham Barton from Duke. Now, his freshman season, he actually played center for the Blue Devils. But ever since then, they moved him outside to play left tackle, and he has played at an absolute star level there. But at the same time, again, he's got the shorter arms. He is so physical, so aggressive, that I think that his game actually projects better inside to center or to guard. Of course, the Seahawks have some youth there, with the exception of the recent free agent addition, Lakin Tomlinson. So I think that that is another player that would make some sense. One last tackle I would mention, just because I put him up in an article available at Seahawks.com for my offensive mock draft here, is Amarius Mims from Georgia. Now, guys, kind of like Devin Witherspoon, and there's not very many times you can compare a 6'8", 340-pound offensive tackle to a 5'11 and 185-pound cornerback like Devin Witherspoon. But in one respect, they are kind of similar, in that Devin Witherspoon didn't become a superstar until his final season at the college level. Amarius Mims didn't even start until this past season at Georgia. He wound up only starting 8 games. But my goodness, the guy, 6'8", 340 pounds, size 17 shoes, just kind of gives you an idea of just what massive this man is. And yet he also has a waist that is a lot slimmer than mine. I can tell you that right now. This is a guy that is just as physically just blessed with the size and the athletic ability that you're looking for. So to me, he is a player that, because he has such long arms, 36-inch arms, he has such great height, and he is a terrific athlete, that he absolutely projects best at the right tackle position, maybe even left tackle someday. But rather than moving him inside the guard, I think that he is best suited to stay outside of tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, I was really curious to see how you were going to tie a bow on that one. And that was really well done in your comparison between Spoon and an offensive lineman. A couple of things as you think about that offensive line. Remember, last year, while you did have an injury with Abe Lucas, it was the interior of that line that just wasn't quite big enough, that just wasn't quite stout enough. So any of these guys, if you're thinking big guys moving inside, I can understand why they would do that based on what we saw last year and just how that run game couldn't really get going on a consistent basis. Now, you mentioned quarterbacks and you like the quarterback class. And I think that there's a lot of conversation in Seattle over if the addition of Sam Howell takes Seattle out of the mix for drafting a quarterback. And I do believe that we got the question kind of answered today.
Yeah, I would say, and I touched on, and free agency and the Sam Howell trade kind of falls under that category, right? And so the goal during free agency is really, it's been tried and true, and year after year, that's not how you build, right? It's an opportunity to supplement your roster. And that was the goal, including the Sam Howell trade, is to supplement our roster and get to a point where we don't really feel like we need to force anything and all options are on the table, whether we're talking about a player at a position or our ability to move up and down the draft. So I think we achieved that. We're excited about what we did, excited about what we're going to be able to do next weekend and moving forward, because even after the draft, we're not done, right? So all options on the table, and excited about that.
I don't think this is a uniquely Seahawks strategy, but something they definitely like to do, and it makes a lot of sense, is you want to plug some holes in free agency, or in this case, a trade, as Nolan said. So you don't want to go into the draft thinking like, oh my God, we need to come at this with two linebackers or we can't field the team. But when you see the way that they do it, that's usually, you know, shorter term deals, less expensive deals, where it's, these moves aren't preventing you from going out and using even an early pick on whether it's a, you know, he mentioned Lakin Tomlinson, whether it's a guard or a quarterback or linebacker, safety, any of these positions that coming, you know, into the offseason look like areas of need. you did what you need to. So you feel good about this position right now. You got guys you like. So if the draft falls where, you know, last year's a great example, Jackson Smith and Jigba was not a need player, but he was the best guy there. They really liked him, so they went and got him as a pick of like, this guy can really help be a big part of our future, even if he's not what we need right now. You can get yourself in a position where you might have to pass on a guy like that if you don't take care of those needs early on.
Well, and for me, when I listen to the comments here as far as the quarterback position and how the trade for Sam Howell could potentially impact Seattle's draft board, I just want to say this. I don't just like the trade for Sam Howell. I absolutely love this move. Now, I was very high on Sam Howell coming out of North Carolina, but I just like this move because I see a future starting caliber player. Of course, he not just future, in the past. He started this the entire season this past campaign in Washington. So definitely a starter or starting caliber player. I think that it pushes Geno Smith to be even better than he's been in his two Pro Bowl seasons here in Seattle, which is a good thing. I also think that it makes sound financial sense. You know, when the one game that Drew Lock was pushed into a starting role a year ago, I mean, I think anybody in Seahawk fan out there, that's going to be one of your most, you know, one of your favorite memories of a year ago was just the drop in that pearl, you know, for the game-winning touchdown against the defending NFC champion Philadelphia Eagles. But at the same time, when Drew Lock was signed away, then to be able to bring in a younger, similarly gifted quarterback on a much cheaper scale in terms of, you know, just the financial aspect of it, I think is a coup for Seattle. Now, that said, as I mentioned a moment ago, I really do like this quarterback class. And I think that now the Seahawks don't have to take a quarterback, but if one happens to fall into your lap, and one very easily could, given the depth this year, I think that it really puts Seattle in kind of the driver's seat. But I don't think that they have to take a young quarterback, because is what has, I think people really need to make sure that they remember is that Sam Howell is just 24 years old, and there will be a handful of quarterbacks that are selected this year who are already older than him. And of course, again, he has that starting level experience. He's got two more years on his rookie deal that are cheap enough that the Seahawks can handle that. They don't have to take a quarterback, but they are in position to get one in this class because of the fact that they do have enough picks, seven picks, and they don't have the overwhelming needs because, as John mentioned a moment ago, they have brought in some, or they filled some of their biggest areas of concern through free agency.
Yeah, I've got one more big picture question, then we're going to do rapid fire with both of you. You didn't know this was coming, did you, John?
Well, it's more fun if I don't know.
Well, just get ready for it because it'll be a blast. Rob, you were talking about the quarterbacks and being 2 years older than Sam Howell and Sam Howell having NFL experience. My big picture question is this. How has NIL and the transfer portal and everything changed what we are seeing from this draft class?
Jen, it's helpful that we are doing this just via audio, because otherwise I would turn my side of my head and show you the gray hair that the NIL and transfer policy has added to my personal list as far as just trying to keep track of players. Like, I am all for the young athletes being paid for their talent and their work ethic, all of those things. But my goodness, it is much more difficult to track players. And, you know, whether it be the COVID year, so players were given another year of eligibility, the very liberal transfer policy now where you're seeing some players that, you know, okay, you're not a starter. And you see some players who immediately want to transfer because they just feel like that this is their only opportunity right now. They have to play somewhere. And then, of course, the NIL, it used to be that there were so many young players that basically their opportunity to make any type of money for themselves and their family was to get the lure of the NFL contract. And now, of course, they're signing deals with different local companies and being able to get themselves a little bit of money. So they don't feel that same push to go into the NFL. I personally think that this year's draft class has taken a significant hit. In my opinion, there is not the depth this year that we have seen in past years. And I'm not entirely convinced that it's going to get that much better the next couple of years, because again, I think you're going to have a lot of players that might have been on the edge of going into the NFL in previous years. They're going to say, hey, I might just transfer elsewhere because some booster at another program is going to be willing to create some type of a deal that might lure me elsewhere, maybe even in the same college that I played before. So I think ultimately it's good for the individual players. It makes it a much more difficult for evaluating prospects for the NFL. And that's, again, one of the reasons why I think the Seahawks have an advantage, because they have a scouting staff that has that familiarity, knows these players, knows their own system very, very well. And so it puts them in a position to excel in a draft class that I think a lot of other clubs are going to be kind of a little bit frantic and scrambling.
It was interesting talking to Matt Berry a few weeks ago about this, and he pretty frankly said, you know, like to your point, it's not necessarily good for the teams that these guys are on, but he's like, it is good for players, because you've got guys who might make a bad decision to come out and then they end up undrafted and they never really have an NFL career, whereas they can stick around and develop. So you do get some of those later round guys. It's not as deep as it used to be, but sometimes guys are coming out a year later a little more developed. And I also thought it was just kind of funny today that Aaron Hinelein mentioned they've got guys now that they've got three or four different reports on from different scouts in different regions, and they're still in school because they've transferred. So they do get, you know, it's a different system they get, but they get a lot of intel on guys where they've, you know, multiple scouts have studied these guys while they're still in college.
I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the leadership and the personalities change and what shows up at the NFL level. I am still fascinated to see how transferring and working with different coaches, working with different teammates, is that a positive? Is that a negative, right? How do they learn from it? Do they come into a locker room more prepared for that than they would have otherwise? I know that is like further down the road, we'll be able to study it, but I am fascinated to see how that happens. I promised you rapid fire. I have four rapid fire questions for both of you. You ready?
Sure.
Boy, both of you jumped at the exact same time. I was hoping for a little more enthusiasm in a drum roll, but you know what? That's okay. We're just going to power right on through this because you're not going to have any choice but to answer these questions.
Okay.
John, I'm going to have you go first on this one, but both of you are getting the same one. Will the Seahawks trade up or will they trade back?
Neither's not an option.
I wasn't going to put it on there. I was going to make
you choose.
Well,
then back, for sure.
Rob?
Yep, back. Definitely.
If I had neither as an option, would you have chosen that?
I'll let John.
I'd still go back. There's just, neither is always a possibility because you can want to go back and just have no partners. But I think Rob would know better than me, but it sure feels like there's enough premium position guys who could have teams clamoring to move up around that part of the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I personally have 23 players in this draft that I feel are lock solid. First round picks should be first round picks year in and year out. That said, so obviously Seattle 16, they could trade back. That said, I think that there's a possibility that they just end up staying pat just because there's a player that falls to them at 16 overall that is just too darn good to pass up.
We're really bad at this rapid fire thing.
Yeah.
Let's try it again then. The Seahawks go into the draft with 7 selection. How many picks will they end up making? Rob, do you have a guess?
I'm going to guess 9 because, as we said before, we do think that there's a possibility that they trade back. John Schneider is known for that, of course. And again, I think that their understanding of this class is going to create a little bit more aggression in Seattle than perhaps for some other clubs.
Rob stole my number, so I'll go 8.
Oh, okay. Well, then, John, you can start with this one. Will they get a second round pick?
Yes.
There's so much conviction there.
Actually, I'm going to go with no, but they'll get a 2025 second rounder.
Oh.
I think there's going to be a trade back where they can't quite get it. It's the formula doesn't work out, but somehow they end up with somebody's second next year.
Rob?
I'm going to say yes in this class, and the biggest reason why is I just believe that, again, Seattle is going to be aggressive and trying to trade back, and the gap between number 16 overall and number 81 overall, it's a 65 selection gap that is the largest in the NFL, and I just think that John Schneider is going to be basically like doing laps around the Virginia Mesa Athletic Center if he cannot have some type of action on Friday.
I agree with Rob. That John guy was wrong.
All right, last question. This one might be the most fun. whatever, wherever the Seahawks end up making their first round pick, currently it is the number 16 overall pick. What is the first position group the Seahawks will draft?
Can I say running back just to troll fans?
That's not the kind of podcast that we have, John.
I'm just going to take the easiest answer and say offensive line.
Okay. Are you going to specify
I think
tackle?
We had this conversation earlier, but I think there's a lot of tackles who could be guards in one of those type. Like on draft day, we're asking, where's he going to play?
Okay.
One of those guys.
Rob, what's the position group the Seahawks are going to draft first?
I'm going to do the same thing that John did when he said that I took his answer, so he adjusted slightly. I do think the offensive line is the strong likelihood. That said, John Schneider rarely does what we think. And so I'm actually going to go with an edge rusher of some type, again, in a possible trade down scenario.
Okay, I like it. You know, we are not that long away from finding out if you guys nailed those answers and those
picks.
We'll
delete the tapes if we're wrong.
That right. You'll never be able to find these in the archive ever again. Here's what I know, what you will be able to find: a recap of the Seahawks draft after they have made all their selections. We will be back to break that down and tell you what that means for the 2024 team. For now, we are going to say thanks for listening and thanks to Rob Rang for being our guest today. We'll see you next time.